This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. If you're familiar with the work of political satirist Bill Maher, you probably know that he thinks religion has done way more harm than good in the world. In his new film, Religious, he describes religion as dangerous. Religious is a satirical documentary in which Maher travels to religious sites around the world, ranging from the Vatican and Jerusalem to a Muslim gay bar in Amsterdam and a Christian theme park in Orlando. The movie is directed by Larry Charles, who also directed the movie Borat, wrote episodes of Seinfeld, directed episodes of Larry David's Curb Your Enthusiasm, and has been a showrunner for Entourage. Bill Maher and Larry Charles are my guests. Later we'll talk with Stephen Waldman, the founder of BeliefNet, the largest website devoted to religion and spirituality. Let's start with a clip from Religious. In this scene, Bill Maher is talking with Democratic Senator Mark Pryor of Arkansas.
Do you believe in evolution?
You know, first, I don't know. Clearly, the scientific community is a little divided on some of the specifics of that, and I understand that.
I don't think they are.
No,
I think they pretty much agree.
I don't know how it all happened. I mean, I'm certainly willing to
But it couldn't possibly premise. Have been Adam and Eve 5,000 years ago with a talking snake in a garden, could it?
Well, it could have possibly been that.
Come on. This is my problem.
Yeah.
You're a senator. You are one of the very few people who are really running this country. It worries me that people are running my country who believe in a talking snake.
You don't have to pass an IQ test to be in the Senate, though.
Bill Maher, Larry Charles, welcome to Fresh Air. Bill, one of the things you say in the movie is that religion must die for mankind to live. Strong words. Do you think in responding to religious extremism, you've become like an anti-religion extremist?
I'm not an extremist at all. I believe in the doctrine of I don't know when it comes to the afterlife. And to say I don't know about the afterlife is really the only reasonable and also humble opinion you can hold. Anybody who believes in personal gods that are really the result of a long 2,000-year-old game of telephone, personal gods who you pray to and who perform miracles and fight with devils and so forth, that's extremism. That's extremely irrational. So I don't think I'm the extremist, no.
Larry, do you share Bill Maher's strong anti-religion views?
Yes, I think I do. I think we both very much in sync on our philosophies about religion. I think we both look at the world and we see all the madness taking place in the name of religion. It's almost like we're surprised there aren't more people who feel this way. It seems to be the only reasonable approach to it.
How did you find the interviewees for the movie? And Larry, I guess I'm interested in hearing what you told them, because you've had a lot of experience from the Borat movie of how to get people to talk to somebody not quite getting what the context of the conversation was going to be when the movie's made?
Well, first of all, we made a master list of people we wanted to talk to. We started with the Pope. We started with God, actually. We even talked to God, but God was so boring we actually cut him out of the movie. But we then tried to reach the Pope and the head of the Mormon Church and the head of Scientology. But, of course, you can't get to those people. And so, they are protected by many filters, and you just can't get to them. So we had a master list, and we kept on reaching out to people and saying, are you interested in being involved in a documentary about religion? And many people love to talk about their belief systems, and so there was no problem getting many, many people to talk about it. And sometimes I would tell them who the interviewer was. If they asked, I would tell them. If they didn't ask, I didn't feel obligated to tell them. In the United States, sometimes that was necessary. In Europe, it was less necessary. Bill is a little less known in Europe, so it wasn't as volatile a dynamic initially as it was in the United States.
But you didn't say, we're making a satirical film that's going to be very anti-religion, would you be interviewed for it?
I don't think that would have been a wise thing to say if I wanted to make this movie. I kept it a much more general level of we're making a movie about religion, we want you to discuss your views, which was true.
Now, when you told people we're making a movie about religion, we want you to discuss your views, and you didn't mention that Bill Maher was the person behind the movie, and then Bill Maher shows up to do the interview. And Bill, you're pretty famous as, in general, and you're also famous for not for not having a lot of room for religion in your life. So when you'd show up to do the interview, would some people just kind of draw back in shock?
Well, yes, they. I'm not going to lie. That is the truth. That's what happened, is that I would show up at the last minute after the scene was lit and the person was sitting and very often had been talking for quite a bit of time about their religion with Larry or somebody else. And we did, on a number of occasions, see someone's face register distress. But nobody got up and tore their mic off and walked out of the room. You have to understand, first of all, that religious people, like everybody else in America, are media whores, and they want to be on camera also. And also, you know, if something is as important to you as religion is to these religious folks, I guess you feel an obligation to defend your faith. And, you know, if you can't beat Bill Maher, what are you going to do against the devil?
You tried to shoot at the Vatican and you were thrown out. What did you want to shoot there, and how did you end up being shown the exit?
The fact is that we didn't intend to get inside the Vatican. We never thought we would. But after we talked to Father Foster, he offered to take us inside. And he took us right past the guards and everything. And we didn't even know what we would do. We wound up on the floor outside the door of the Pope's apartment. And that's when things sort of got out of control and we were escorted out.
And tell us who Father Foster is.
He's this priest who is the chief Latinist at the Vatican. He's an American. He's from Milwaukee. And he has an apartment and an office there right down the hall from the Pope. I guess it's a leftover position, really, from the time when Latin was much more important. I asked him how often he sees the Pope. He said he met Pope John Paul once in 1979 when he first became Pope, and the Pope hadn't talked to him in 26 years after that. So apparently the Latinist job, it's not vital.
I think you made a bad joke in Latin.
Right.
So this father, you talked to him outside of the grounds of the Vatican, and
right.
He seemed to be agreeing with you that the Vatican was a little too opulent.
Yes.
Oh, among other controversial things he said. That was the least.
Yeah.
You know, he said, what did I say, Larry, that he thought he didn't believe the Jesus story.
He didn't believe the Jesus story. Bill mentioned hell, about going to hell, and Father Foster said, oh, hell, that's a bunch of nonsense. You know, I mean, he debunked virtually every doctrine of the church.
He said, to sum it up, he said, you know, people need their stories, which is pretty much what we were saying.
Yeah.
Did it surprise you that he was talking that way, since he's employed by the Vatican?
Yes.
And did you ask him why he talks that way, since he's employed by the Vatican?
I think he's at a point in his life. You know, he's an older man. He's been there for 45 years. I actually think that most of the Catholic hierarchy probably feels this way. They all know that they're stories, and they know that they're perpetuating these stories for the masses. They're all PhDs. They're highly educated men. They're rational men on a certain level, and they recognize the difference between the myths and the metaphors and the poetry of it and the reality, the literal truth of it, you know? They have no problem reconciling that for themselves. It's the masses who are not allowed to sort of be part of that process.
We opened the interview with a clip from the movie in which, Bill, you're talking with Senator Mark Pryor. Why did you choose him?
Well, because he's, I think, from the Bible Belt. And I think when Senator Pryor says he thinks that life may have started 5,000 years ago in the Garden of Eden, he's being sincere. I don't think he's faking it for his constituents, as some politicians do. John McCain has been doing that for a year now that he's running for president. He's pretending to be a pious man, and he never has been. But I think Senator Pryor really is like so many of the people in the heartland of this country who are Bible-believing Christians.
I think it's fair to say one of the things you feel particularly strongly about is the mixing of religion and politics. What are some of the things that each of you have heard during this presidential campaign that you find most troubling?
Well, there's a clip on YouTube these days of Sarah Palin in one of her churches, and she's standing before the congregation, and some, I don't know what he is, a minister, a pastor, somebody is putting his hands on her and telling her that he's praying for her. And then he says something like, I'm going to cure you of witches. So in my book, that's a witch doctor. You know, if you're talking about getting rid of witches in someone's life, that's a witch doctor.
This is a pastor from Kenya who was visiting her church.
You've seen it?
Yes.
Okay. So it's pretty frightening to me that it's the year 2008 and we're considering for the second most important job in the United States of America someone who's being ministered to by a witch doctor.
And Larry, your vote?
Well, I would say, you know, when I think about it, that the Scopes trial was in 1925. So 80 years later, we're still arguing about putting creationism in the public schools next alongside of evolution. I mean, it's like teaching magic and chemistry. It's really like such a regressive step that that frightens me. And the blurring of the line between church and state that really began with Jimmy Carter, ironically, as a Democrat, he introduced Jesus into the campaign. And once he was ineffective as a president, the Republicans seized upon that. And drew in all these religious voters, created the moral majority, et cetera. And ever since then, we've sort of been on this Christian nation path, which is very much not in keeping with the founding fathers, despite what people try to say. So I think that trend is very, very scary to me.
The film starts, Bill, with you saying that the end of days used to be God's business, but now man can end the world too. Are you concerned when somebody in politics believes that the end of days is near, that the second coming is near?
Absolutely. You have identified.
Why?
Because if the most important thing in a person's life is their fervent religious belief, and I'm sure that George Bush would say, and he's not kidding you, he means it. I'm sure he would say his religion, his relationship with Jesus, his views of the afterworld are the most important thing in his life. Sarah Palin would say the same thing. Okay, if the next thing out of their mouth is that they believe end times are going to come within their lifetime, and I'm quite sure Sarah Palin believes that, that's very frightening because they're not against the world coming to an end. It's actually a good thing because they want to meet Jesus. They want to bring it on. It's called the rapture. Does that sound like a bad thing to you? It sounds romantic to me. I wouldn't refer to the end of the world as the rapture. I would use a name that connoted something bad.
If you're just joining us, my guest is political satirist Bill Maher, and his new movie, Religious, is a comic satire about religion with real people in it. It's not a fiction film. It's a nonfiction film. And he travels around the world interviewing religious people and going to religious sites. Also with us is Larry Charles, who directed the film. I think in answer to your question, I think one of the problems that some people who are secular have with your just like adamant anti-religion views is that there seems to be no room in there for the kind of religion in which, yes, it's stories, but they're stories that have meaning. They're stories that are metaphorical. Their religion comes along with this sense of
like
always
what?
Questioning. Well, wait, let me finish. With the sense of always questioning, like, why are we here? What's the purpose of life? What's the purpose of death? How do we get through life's ups and downs? I mean, religion supplies like rituals and people
why are
who
they
can.
Good?
For a lot of people, rituals, for instance, at a time when a loved one dies, it's a structure to help you through a horrible experience, reminding you of the eternal nature of death with somebody who's been through it a lot with a lot of people, whether it's a rabbi or a priest or a pastor. I mean,
but you can get it without resorting to
you can.
Ancient
myths. Oh, of course you
myths.
Can. You can. Okay. But on the other hand, for a lot of people, there's comfort in resorting to something that has been going on since ancient history.
But is it ultimately soothing to believe in an illusion that isn't true? You know, in the end, isn't that the illusion being shattered going to be more traumatic for that person than believing in something that isn't true? It's that's the question, I think, the equation that you have to balance.
And religions bring with them so many horror stories. I will not argue with you that people do get comfort from religion. What I would say to you is that it comes at a terrible price. And that price is the way religions tribalize the people on Earth. Most of the wars we've had were in some way religious. You look at the history of mankind from ancient times to the present, and you go through the list of wars and crusades and suicide bombings and honor killings and the oppression of minorities and the oppression of women and having sex with children systematically and exorcism and burning witches. I mean, stop me if you've heard enough. But, you know, that's a pretty big price for comfort that can be gotten other ways. I'm not religious, but I have my traditions, you know. I always have Christmas dinner with my sister. There's a tradition that makes sense because I like her, she's my family, and I really want to do it. I'm not just doing it because we've always done it, and it doesn't make sense anymore. Religions have to be re-looked at to see if they still make sense.
Bill, you mentioned in the movie that when you were growing up, your father was Catholic and your mother was Jewish, but the children, you and your sister, were raised Catholic. And the impression I got from the movie is that you didn't know your mother was Jewish until later in life. Is that right?
Well, when I was about 13 is when it came up. Yes, I had never given it a thought because when you're a child, you do whatever adults have you doing. And if it's part of the routine from the earliest time you can remember, you really don't question things. So from the earliest I could remember, my father, my sister, and I went to church and did Catholic things, and my mother stayed home. And I never really thought why. I never gave it a thought. And it came up when I was about 12 or 13, and then it was just like, oh.
So what was your reaction when you found out that your mother was Jewish? And, you know, technically in the Jewish religion, if you're born to a Jewish mother, you're Jewish. It's the mother who determines.
Well, I know people say that to me all the time, and I think it's the most ridiculous thing in the world that people would, A, propose to tell me what I am because of some law they're listening to, and, B, it's a Roman law. So I'm going to cop to being a Jew because of what the Romans said 2,000 years ago? I mean, it's just really silly. I mean, that's my heritage. I was raised Catholic. My mother is of Jewish descent. But, you know, as soon as I became a thinking adult, I said, no, I don't want any part of any of this nonsense.
So your mother's briefly in the movie. You talk to your mother and your sister in the church that you used to go to as a child. And your mother in the movie explains that she and your father stopped going to church because the church was opposed to birth control, which they were using. So they sent you to church even though they stopped going?
Well, as I say, my mother never went.
Right, right.
My father stopped going, and we didn't go to church anymore after I was, it's about when I was 13, because I was, I remember I was about to get my confirmation is the sacrament that you do at that age. That's where you get a middle name. I was about to get a middle name. To this day, I do not have a middle name because right before that, my father just stopped going to church. And I always thought it was because he didn't like Pope Paul VI. He loved Pope John. He was the liberal pope. And when he died in 1963 and Kennedy died that year, I think a lot of lights went out in my father's life. And Pope Paul was too conservative. So I wanted to find out from my mother. And when she told me, you know, it was because of the birth control thing, it really blew me away because, of course, I thought my parents only had sex twice for my sister and myself. And the idea that they were using birth control was just quite shocking.
Did you read the Old and the New Testaments before making the movie?
Yes, actually, a number of times over the years.
Yeah.
And again, just before we made the movie. And we carried all these holy books with us because we would cite things, cite quotes, and so we became pretty conversant in it.
I took a course in the Bible at Cornell when I was an undergrad. Not that I was ever a grad, but I did go to college. And when I was in college, I did study the Bible. Yeah, I remember I had a course.
Did you find anything in the Old or New Testaments that you thought, well, this is actually beautifully written, or this is actually a really interesting thought
that I should keep with me,
whether I practice religion or not?
The prescription against eating lobster, I think, is excellent because I don't like lobster. It is a dirty fish or sea creature, and I don't like the way they kill them by putting them in the boiling pot. And so I think the thing against lobster, I'm totally down with that.
To me, it reads like a Pynchon novel.
Yeah. I mean, the New Testament is obviously different. The New Testament, if you strip away all the magic tricks and the bells and whistles and the nonsense, the message of Jesus is not only beautiful but revolutionary. The idea that the meek shall inherit the earth and the poor and the powerless have just as much dignity as the powerful and the rich, that was a very new idea at the time, and it has not gone out of style, I might add. And it's a wonderful message. It's a shame it gets lost amidst all the other nonsense.
Bill Maher is the producer and star of Religulous and the host of the HBO series Real Time with Bill Maher. Larry Charles directed Religulous. We recorded an interview with Larry Charles about his other work, directing Borat, writing episodes of Seinfeld, and directing episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm. We'll hear that interview sometime soon. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The website BeliefNet has been following the elections with reporting and analysis of how religion has been figuring into the presidential and vice presidential campaigns. The website is also asking for readers' opinions of Bill Maher's film Religulous. My guest, Stephen Waldman, is the founder and editor-in-chief of BeliefNet. It's the largest website devoted to religion and spirituality. It's not affiliated with any specific religion. Waldman is also the author of the book Founding Faith, about some of the myths surrounding the role of religion in the founding of America. He says the founding faith wasn't Christianity, and it wasn't secularism, it was religious liberty. Stephen Waldman, welcome back to Fresh Air. Let's start first with your opinion of a Religulous. I know you saw it. What did you think?
Well, I thought it was funnier than I was expecting and more challenging, but also, as expected, highly offensive and quite slippery in its own way.
What do you mean by offensive and slippery?
Well, throughout a lot of the movie, he says that all he is trying to do is make the case for doubt, for people having doubt and being free to have doubt. But by the end of the movie, it's very clear that he does not have doubt. He has great certainty about his beliefs against religion, and he doesn't see the contradiction there. He also, most of the movie is an attack on fundamentalism, and he really doesn't deal very well with moderate religion or religion that isn't, take scripture literally.
What would you say to him to make a case for religion?
Well, first of all, for every example he gives of religion harming society, there's at least one or many more of religion helping society, whether it's, the role that faith played in the civil rights movement on a social level, or whether it's the way that faith drives millions, if not billions, of people towards leading good lives or getting through crisis and trauma. There's just literally, billions of examples of faith helping people on a personal level and helping the world on a global level. I'm not arguing that faith doesn't also do harm, as he suggested, but to only look at one part of the story is not really a documentary, as he calls it.
One of the things that you and others have been writing about on BeliefNet is how religion is figuring into the presidential campaign. So I'd like to talk with you about that, if you will. You've written that you have friends who are secular and friends who are very religious, and you've been trying to figure out what you find scary and not scary about how religion is being used in the campaign to reassure your secular friends that certain things aren't scary and to warn others that certain things kind of are scary about how religion and politics are meeting. So I'm going to first ask you to choose one of the statements that you've chosen to reassure your secular friends that it doesn't sound as bad, that the statement isn't as bad as they think it is.
Well, this particularly came up in the context of Sarah Palin and the swirl of information of people learning about what she believes and what she practices, and it's absolutely terrifying to a lot of people. The first example that came up, and it was used by Charlie Gibson in his first interview with Sarah Palin, was a comment that she made essentially talking about God's plan for the Iraq War. And many people became enraged and frightened by the statement because it sounded to some like she was saying the Iraq war was God's plan, which would be understandably of concern.
Let me just quote what she said, because I have the quote here.
Good.
She said that she asked the members of the church to pray, quote, that our leaders, our national leaders, are sending U.S. soldiers out on a task that is from God. That's what we have to make sure that we're praying for, that there is a plan, and that that plan is God's plan.
Right. So she's saying we need to pray that it is God's plan. In other words, it may be God's plan, it may not be God's plan. We should pray that it sure is. That strikes me as being perfectly within the normal, legitimate bounds of a politician, and a Christian politician, talking about faith and politics, that we all want to be taking steps that are in line with God's will and God's values. In that case, it did not seem to me that she was justifying the war as being God's plan. The way, and that was the way it was interpreted by Charlie Gibson and many other people.
But if you're if you are secular, doesn't it sound kind of scary that somebody would think that going to war or not going to war is God's plan, that God has a specific plan and it's the job of the politicians to follow it?
Well, I think if you're secular, you are frightened by that. And this is one of those areas where...
Well, even if you're just of a different religion, or even if you're of that religion and don't take things as literally as that.
It doesn't bother me if someone is trying to figure out what is the right thing to do according to God's plan or what God would want. You know, there is a long tradition of this among our founding fathers, especially trying to do what they thought was right and trying to justify it as being part of God's plan. The slippery slope is when politicians claim to know what God's plan is and claim to try to figure out the policy to match it up with God's plan. That's where it gets very troublesome because, first of all, where does that politician come off claiming that they have a direct pipeline to God's voice when other politicians or other voters don't? Well, that's where it really gets dangerous. The mere fact of someone trying to craft a policy that they think is, you know, in sync with what their religion or their God would want seems fine. That's absolutely what, you know, Martin Luther King did when he was promoting the civil rights movement. It's absolutely what George Washington was doing when he was fighting the American Revolution. Now, there's a second Sarah Palin quote where she does go into what I view as a dangerous area.
What's that?
That's the one where she says that it is God's will that they build a particular natural gas pipeline. And that quote to me was very different because in that case, she was saying, or did appear to be saying, that it is God's will that this pipeline be built. That's problematic for all sorts of reasons. First of all, how does she know that it's God's plan that this pipeline gets built? What does that do, and what kind of position does that put the opposition in? That means if you oppose the pipeline, you're against God, you're against God's will. That's exactly the kind of religion and politics mixing that the founding fathers were terrified of, and with good cause.
She signed a bill in Alaska while she was governor, creating a Christian Heritage Week. What do you think of that?
That made me uncomfortable for a couple reasons. First, it was a string of founding fathers' quotes proving what good Christians they were, and I just happened to write a whole book about how founding fathers' quotes have been routinely taken out of context, and there she was doing it as the governor of Alaska, ripping the founding fathers out of context and portraying them as devout Christians when not all of them were. More importantly, if the state of Alaska has a week called Christian Heritage Week and they don't also have Jewish Heritage Week and Muslim Heritage Week and Secular Heritage Week, then they are putting the official stamp of approval of Alaska that they are preferring one religion over another. That's a big no-no. What the Supreme Court has said and what many philosophers believe is that it is okay for government or government officials to stick their toe in the water of promoting religion in general as long as they do it equally for all religions, as long as they are very pluralistic about it. Once the government gets in the business of favoring a particular religion, that really does go against the spirit or the letter of the Constitution.
Bill Maher made it clear that he's very disturbed by the idea of somebody who has political power believing that the end of days is imminent. Because if there's the possibility of the end of the world, they're going to see that as a good thing, as a chance to get reunited with Jesus, as opposed to a bad thing that needs to be avoided. I'm wondering what your take is, as the founder of BeliefNet, about, in particular, Sarah Palin. I know the church that she used to attend to, the Wasilla Assembly of God, has it on their list of the basic beliefs of the church that the rapture is imminent, the end of days is imminent.
I think it's a fair question to ask Sarah Palin, but it's also important that we keep in mind that many people who believe in end times or even say that it's imminent don't necessarily mean it's tomorrow or in their lifetime. And secondly, even those who do think it might be in their lifetime are not changing anything about their lives. They're not doing anything differently as a result. Now, I think it is a legitimate question because some people are doing things differently. And if a public official is going to be influenced by that view, if for instance, it makes them not want to have peace in the Middle East because war in the Middle East will actually be what brings Jesus's return, well, that is an important thing to know. But it is important to know that many, many people who believe in end times don't change their lives or their behavior at all.
One of the videos being widely circulated on the internet now is of a minister from Kenya named Thomas Muthi, who was at Sarah Palin's church. This is, I guess, at her former church. This is a few years ago. And he had a reputation in his village of having chased out a witch, someone who he believed was practicing witchcraft. So when he was praying over Sarah Palin, one of the things he prayed for was to protect her from the spirit of witchcraft. Where does that register on your meter?
It doesn't bother me that much. It would bother me a lot more if she piped up and said, yes, I agree. I've got a lot of witches in my life that I would like to get rid of and started naming names. That would be very troublesome. But, you know, in my line of work as editor of BeliefNet, I'll often be in situations where people will want to pray over me or for me. And a lot of times it comes from a direction that is, you know, certainly not where I came from. But I tend to view it as a gift and as someone trying to do well by me. So it didn't bother me that someone was praying over her that way, because it really left unanswered the question of what did she think of this.
Is that a question you'd like to ask her?
Yes, that would definitely be a question I would like to ask her. I have about 75 questions related to religion that I would like to ask Sarah Palin. That's not even in the top 10, but I absolutely would love to know what she was thinking when he was talking about casting out witches. Was she thinking, oh, I hope this gets over quickly and there's no one filming this for YouTube? Or was she thinking, yes, good, I'm glad he's saying that because I've got a lot of witches in my life I'd like to get rid of?
You know, it seems that John McCain chose Sarah Palin in part because she is an evangelical Christian and she could rally the base. And so many Americans have questions that they want to know about her faith. She's been doing remarkably little with the press, but the couple of interviews that she's given, I don't think she's been asked directly about her religion, not the questions that you would like to hear asked. How appropriate do you think it would be for a journalist to just ask point blank the kind of questions you've been asking?
I think it's completely appropriate. And these types of questions have been asked of Barack Obama and John McCain and Joe Biden. And they ought to be asked of Sarah Palin as well. The problem is, of course, that there's a lot of different types of questions that need to be asked of Sarah Palin. And so these religion questions need to sort of get in line. But I do think it's one of the key outstanding questions about her is how does her faith affect the way she would govern? It's obviously an issue of great concern to some voters.
It seems that religion has backfired a little bit during this presidential campaign. For example, Barack Obama had to distance himself from Jeremiah Wright, his former pastor. He even had to leave his church, in part, he said, because it was causing so much, the controversy was causing so much distraction and ruckus in the church. John McCain, after getting his endorsement from John Hagee, ended up having to disavow the endorsement because of Hagee's controversial views about the end times and homosexuals and Hurricane Katrina. And Sarah Palin appears to have been chosen in part because of her religious views and their ability to rally the evangelical base. But at the same time, you could argue that her religious views have alienated a lot of voters. And it's unclear how that will play out on Election Day. I wonder what your thoughts are about how religion has at times backfired this time around or made things problematic.
Well, we're certainly seeing that if you insert religion into a campaign, it's not a guaranteed positive thing. For every effort to promote your religion as a way of getting votes, you run the risk of it backfiring and leading to some controversy. And Sarah Palin's a great example of that. I mean, she absolutely energized religious conservatives in the Republican Party, which was no small feat because they really didn't like McCain very much, and yet overnight, it made them enthusiastic about the McCain-Palin ticket. That's quite a neat trick politically. On the other hand, obviously, she comes with certain baggage, and we will see on Election Day whether she ended up being a net plus or a net minus. Barack Obama has talked more about his personal faith than John McCain and Sarah Palin combined, and I think it's mostly been an electoral positive. But as you noted, he's also got hammered for his connections to his past church and is still trying to disabuse people of the notion that he's Muslim. So we're seeing in very, very rich detail that when you encourage or invite religion to be part of a political campaign, you can't be sure that it's going to have a nice, noble cleansing effect on the political system. You can't be sure that it's only going to help you. It clearly cuts both ways. And by the way, this is not the first time this has happened. You know, in the 1800 election between John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, Jefferson accused Adams of shoving religion down America's throats, that he was going to create an official state religion, which was a bit of an exaggeration. But it showed that religion has been used fairly and unfairly in presidential elections going all the way back to the beginning. And I suppose that should make us feel a little bit better that however bad it gets, we'll survive.
John McCain has made reference to America being a Christian nation. I've seen you refer to this. So can you tell us what the context was and what specifically he said about America as a Christian nation?
He was asked whether he thought the Constitution decreed America to be a Christian nation, and he said yes, the Constitution defines America as a Christian nation, which is way out there. I mean, that's just untrue. There's lots of different ways of fudging and finessing that question. Lots of people say America is a Christian nation, and that means, you know, it's majority Christian or it was infused with Judeo-Christian values. There's ways of phrasing that where you can fudge and be, you know, sort of subject to interpretation. But he went farther than that and actually said the Constitution created a Christian nation, which is not true. I actually viewed it as a sign that McCain, when he tries to pander to religious conservatives, he usually messes it up. He's just not that good at it. You know, most religious conservative politicians, when they answer that same question, come up with that wording that implies that it's sort of a Christian nation. Christianity had a higher place in it, but it also allows for other religions. There's many different ways of fudging that, but he didn't quite know what they were.
Now, Joe Biden is a Catholic, which is still a minority religion as far as the White House goes. Has the Catholic Church threatened to withhold communion from him because he supports a woman's right to choose to have an abortion, although he opposes federal funding for abortion?
Well, the whole Catholic Church hasn't gone that far, but individual bishops have suggested that he might not want to present himself for communion. This is a problem for all pro-choice Catholic politicians. And ironically, right now, Barack Obama is doing better among Catholics than John Kerry, who was Catholic, done with Catholics. And it sure would be a supreme irony if it turns out that Barack Obama is able to do better among Catholics because he's not Catholic. Because he's not Catholic, he doesn't have to deal with this issue of whether or not he's a bad Catholic for being pro-choice. The other really interesting test that Biden's candidacy provides is what kind of a Catholic can actually draw Catholic votes. In other words, Joe Biden is not a theological Catholic in terms of being 100% in sync with the teachings of the church. On the other hand, he is very much a cultural Catholic. He went to Catholic boys' school. He went to a Catholic high school. He had a rosary under his pillow when he was getting brain surgery for his aneurysm. And he came from a kind of working-class Catholic background. If anyone can make the case that he was a cultural Catholic, Joe Biden can. He's trying to appeal to Catholics in a really interesting way. He doesn't go around quoting scripture or talking at great length about his Catholic upbringing, but he uses words and phrases that are very evocative of Catholic social teaching. So when he talks about economics and employment, he doesn't just say we need more jobs. He says we need to fight for the dignity of work. The dignity of work is a phrase that is a critical part of Catholic social teaching. So he will try to cast classic Democratic Party economic talking points as being part of Catholic social teaching. And then he'll also just drop, you know, anecdotes about his experience in Catholic boys' school and things like that. So it's a kind of subtle use of Catholic language and his own biographical material more than it is a, you know, quoting the Pope or a particular encyclical.
Have you been following what's happening in the Jewish vote, if we can generalize that way?
Yes. For a while, it was really looking like John McCain was going to do better among Jews than a Republican had done in a long time. And that's because there are a lot of Jews who have problems with Barack Obama, and I think there's a real racial element to that. Now, Sarah Palin's selection as John McCain's running mate may reverse that pattern, because while Palin is thrilling evangelical Christians, she's scaring a lot of American Jews. So it may well be, in particular, that Florida, a critical state in this election, has moved closer to the Obama side as a result of the Palin selection.
Well, you know, because McCain is so close to Joe Lieberman, who is an Orthodox Jew, I think that was probably having an impact on many Jewish voters. But why do you think Sarah Palin is, as you put it, scaring Jewish voters, some Jewish voters?
Well, Sarah Palin, you know, among other things, signed a law calling for Christian Heritage Week in Alaska. And things like that, you know, make Jews fearful that she's a Christian extremist who's going to shove, you know, Christianity down their throats. And that creates a lot of worries for particularly older Jews, of which there are many in Florida.
Before we wrap up, let me just ask you if you have any other impressions that you'd like to share with us about how religion is playing out in this presidential campaign.
The economic crisis has meant that even among the most observant religious people in America, moral values issues are secondary this year to the economy. That's a hugely important factor as we head toward the election. That's very different from last time around. Another big factor that hasn't been much discussed is the massive shift of Hispanics towards the Democratic Party. And it turns out that that shift is mostly coming from Protestant Hispanics. And these are Protestant Hispanics who are Pentecostal or evangelical and really like George Bush's faith. And they've now abandoned the Republican Party and shifted to the Democrats in large measure. And that hasn't been discussed very much, but that may end up being one of the most important religious developments of the entire election.
Stephen Waldman, thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Stephen Waldman is the founder and editor-in-chief of BeliefNet.com and the author of the book Founding Faith, Providence, Politics, and the Birth of Religious Freedom in America. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org.